I'm Llewellyn King, the host of White House Chronicle, which is coming right up. But first, a few thoughts of my own. A bit satirical, actually, but they are my own. Some of you were expecting me to announce my candidacy for the President of the United States, along with those others who got all the headlines. There have been a few problems. There are solutions, too. How's that for a campaign zinger? There is the problem of my birth. I was born in a foreign country with un-American parents. I have to check with the Ted Cruz camp on that particular one. There is a money problem. At the moment, I have $138 in my account, but that amount will swell when my Social Security check comes in next week. In the long term, I have a crafty, two-pronged approach to raise the billion or so dollars I will need for my campaign. My wife will set up a foundation called the Foreign Governments Friends Committee, which will raise money like a 4th of July flag. Unlike one of my opponents, I will not beat about the bush on foreign campaign donations. I will take them all, see that they are properly laundered, and promise the donors all sorts of favorable treatment. I can renege later, not a word. Then there is a crowdsourcing. When my message gets out, I expect a Niagara Falls of money. I will be after the disaffected, unhappy people who hate all the candidates. The nutters of the left and the nutters of the right have lots of dough. Here is a peek at other aspects of my program. Bring back manufacturing. Backstory, by lowering the minimum wage so that our labor is cheap. Get tough with Iran. Any Iranian waiter found passing himself off as an Italian at a New York restaurant will get summary deportation. Give China an ultimatum. Double the value of your currency or millions of Americans will be forbidden to shop at Walmart. In the Middle East, trust the dictators. We will support the most awful monsters in the time-honored way. If we could get Saddam Hussein out of the grave, I would go for it. Likewise, Muammar Gaddafi. Call it the strongman policy. No messing about with uprisings. I will be a tough guy supporting other tough guys. I will say to Vladimir Putin, when we are shirtless, I don't give a hoot about Ukraine. Take it. But I want you to invade China. Just a little way, and crush ISIS, you know, the way you did Czechoslovakia and Hungary in the glory days. That should take care of the world. At home, I will have a most flexible of policies based on the latest polling. If you are in favor of abortion, tell Gallup and you will get it. Want the Ten Commandments on the wall of the Capitol? No problem. If you produce a convincing poll, preferably written on stone tablets. What is democracy but a craven pursuit of votes through polling? Go democratic all the way, I say. Wait until you hear some of my appointments. How do you fancy Donald Trump for Secretary of State? Here is someone who will appreciate my tough guys are always right policy. Before I announce, I will perfect my Israel strategy. I am leaning toward giving honorary citizenship to Benjamin Netanyahu so I can make him my national security advisor. Why should Congress claim Bibi as their own? I will have goodies to offer him that will beat whatever John Boehner and Mitch McConnell can do. How about a hard pass to the White House and a regular chance to be on the Sunday talk shows for starters? Daryl Issa is my choice for ambassador to Libya in recognition of his Benghazi studies. Finally, my coup de grace, immigration. Simple. No one will want to live here when I am in the White House. Cheers. Well, there you are. A bit of silliness, Linda. What do you think? What do you think of all of these people running for the presidency, 19 or 20 Republicans, about five possibles on the Democratic side, with a lot more of a, you know, run for the sake of running, no hope whatsoever. Do any of these people know how people who are working for the minimum wage are hurting? Do they know what it is like to try to raise a family on insufficient money? Do they know of the insecurity that most families feel as companies merge and jobs are lost? They haven't convinced me they know these things or that they feel. They've convinced me that they have a lot of really dogmatic positions, which they call not dogma, but they call principles. What do you call them, Linda? And what do you think about this?
Right, well, steady on, steady on, Mr. Candidate for President. And by the way, I think that some of those who are running might want to choose you as a vice presidential running mate.
Let's be serious, Linda.
You're going in for the top job, right?
Why is this thing so far, this campaign so far, been so devoid of anything about how people live? What worries people? Where, if I go into restaurants or bars, which I do, yes, I do, or anywhere like that, people are talking about benefits. They're not talking about Obamacare, but they're talking about benefits.
Right.
I don't hear anybody talking about benefits on the stump. I hear them denouncing Obamacare, praising Obamacare, or trying to distance themselves somewhat. But they're not talking about benefits. People don't care what it's called. They want to have the security in their own lives that people say who work in the government have. Security. Benefits.
That's a big idea, and that has not risen to the top yet for anybody. I think that what we're looking at right now in this very early process, and remember, Llewellyn, we've got a long way to go before that election day. So on the Republican side, you've got two different tracks of candidates. You've got those who are looking at the big tent. That is someone like Jeb Bush who's looking at the big tent. Then you've got those who are trying to define what conservatism means. That's the Ted Cruz aspect of the Republican Party. So you've got a little, you've got the battle going on between those two camps in the Republican Party right now. And then you've got Hillary Clinton basically out on her own in the Democratic Party. Now, I believe as
she's in the Clinton Party. She's not in the Democratic Party or the Republican. It's the Clinton Party.
I believe that as Hillary goes on her listening tours, her small, controlled listening tours around the country, some of these ideas are going to come up. Some of your idea about why aren't we talking about the fact that people want the benefit of having something like Obamacare. I believe that she will feel people's pain and she will be talking about this. On the Republican side,
I believe she'll be talking about it. I'm not sure she'll feel it.
All right. But on the Republican side, point well taken. On the Republican side, I think we're going to start to hear about that. We're going to start to hear about a lot in terms, framed in terms of middle class Americans and what middle class Americans deserve. We're going to hear that. We're going to hear about, you know, benefits that they ought to have. But it's going to be framed in a different way. Democrats are going to frame it differently than Republicans, as we know. But it's early on, and at this point, as I said, the Republicans are jockeying for who is going to be the big tent Republican and who is going to be the most conservative of conservative Republicans. Who's going to get that mantle? We're jockeying for the mantles right now. And with Hillary's out there basically on her own to do whatever she wants right now and frame the whole conversation in Clinton terms, in her own way.
But she is going to be framed, is the word you use, haunted is the one I would reach for. by her own past, by the years in the White House, by the years in Arkansas.
We know that.
By the years post-White House. This is a lot of baggage or a lot of controversy if it's not baggage. Things like the billing records for the Rose Law Firm. People mentioned
right.
Benghazi. I think it's a non-starter, but they mentioned Benghazi. And then there's the issue, which you have raised previously, of what has she achieved or what did she achieve when she was Secretary of State? And she achieved a lot of travel, but did she actually bring about anything substantial?
Look, all of this, you can't take that away from Hillary Clinton. That's part and parcel of her. And I think as Rand Paul quipped in New Hampshire recently, that she's got a plane for her entourage, and she's got another plane for her baggage. The baggage is substantial, and she is going to have be on top of that, be able to answer that. At the same time, Republicans, at least in the House, are not going to let her, are not going to let Benghazi disappear. She's going to have to continue to appear and explain what happened there. And it's just, it's going to be a campaign that we're going to say to ourselves, is this Groundhog's Day all over again? Are we watching Hillary Clinton in the last campaign happen all over again? Now with a little bit more on top of it. But some things, you know, I discussed Hillary Clinton on a previous show, and I said, yeah, 112 countries, but what else? We did say that she was important in negotiating the New START agreement.
That's the weapons.
Strategic missiles, right, exactly. But there's another thing that she did for women worldwide, which I think is important. She brought conversations about women up to a higher level in discussion with foreign leaders. It means that no longer can you have things like trafficking just be put in the background and not discussed. And that is very important.
And it wasn't always easy. I was in China with her.
Yes.
And I went to a meeting that she had with Chinese women, and she said, I want you to be lawyers like me. And they looked at her blankly but she stuck to her guns. And gradually people have come to realize that she is a woman and she cares about some of the women's issues. But in the US, do people vote gender?
I think some people do vote gender. I think there will be some women who will say, I want a woman president and she is going to be the one. But I think that
do you vote gender, Linda, or do you vote for the handsomest devil running?
Of course the handsomest devil running. No, I would not vote gender. I want to vote for the best person. That's what everybody should be voting for. Somebody that is going to be the best person for this country, whether it's domestic policy or whether it's foreign policy. I would say even cross party lines to find that person, because that's who we're going to need in this future that is so difficult now, and it's going to be so much more difficult.
We're going to talk about that future in a few minutes when we come back from a station break. This is primarily for our listeners on Sirius XM Radio, the POTUS channel 124, also for our listeners on Voice of America when it is on radio and not on television. I am Llewellyn King, and the program is White House Chronicle. I'm joined today by my co-host, Linda Gasparillo, and we are talking about issues political, domestic, issues political, international, and hopefully having a giggle, as the English say, in the course of it. At least I leave that up to Linda. I have way too much decorum myself.
Oh, of course. Well, I will vote for the handsomest Llewellyn and the most humorous, so I guess that's why I'm voting for you.
Thank you very much, Linda. That'll do neither of us any good whatsoever. We have this long, protracted thing, but you know, there are a lot of other elections happening in the world, and they're not going well in the sense that no longer, as we cannot define the parties here, who is the most conservative, who is liberal, who is not. In other parts of the world, in the UK, in France, of course, always in Italy, there are sharp divisions. But it's very interesting to see what is happening, particularly in Britain, where come the next election, the Scottish nationalists may hold the future of Britain in their hands, or whatever they hold things in.
And will Britain remain part of the Union?
Well, if the Scottish Nationalists have anything to say, they want to be eventually independent and a part of the European Union. But there are a lot of divisions on this. The Prime Minister, Tony Cameron,
David
Cameron, is for Europe. He's promised a plebiscite.
The Liberal Democrats, who form part of his coalition,
are for it, but there are an awful lot of people in the Labour Party, and particularly the backbench of the Conservative Party, who want nothing to do with Europe. They want out. They're called Little Englanders or other things, and they want Britain to withdraw from the European Union, which could be quite catastrophic for Britain and possibly for the European Union, but might assist the Scots in moving away from Britain there will at some point be another election, another plebiscite, and Scotland may go. I think the Union is doomed.
Well, I think one of the things that the British are upset about is benefits. And the fact that because you've got a migration of labor from poor countries in Europe into Britain, there are labor
well,
markets,
I think
there
we should
are
explain
benefits migrants.
These are not illegal. These
They're
are,
not.
These, this is under the European Constitution, under the various treaties. Mobility of labor is fundamental. And as a generalization, mobility of labor is an excellent thing. It has built America. When there's been work in California, people have left
Massachusetts,
Michigan and or Massachusetts, and vice versa. That's why we need portability of benefits. What is happening in Britain, and it's something they weren't prepared for, is an enormous number of people from Eastern Europe
yes.
are coming into Britain and getting work where they can. Add that on top of the number of people they have who came from Pakistan and India.
Right.
And they have a severe problem. It is a small, the British Isles are not large, and Britain, and obviously as a single island, which comprises Scotland and England, it's not enormous.
No.
And people all go
But they're coming and they're getting the benefits and well, and that is what I think the British are very upset
about. Well, I think
about.
It's about jobs, it's about benefits, which we began this program talking about, those things that you get in a civilized society that you don't get in a hurting society, which is some kind of security, health, education, unemployment. These are things we're not as generous with in this country as they are in Europe.
Yes.
We're a little lagging. We're lagging on health and we're lagging on some of the other benefits. We have great mobility, though, and probably at the end of the day, many more opportunities in the U.S. It still is an amazing land of opportunity. But these are global problems. Then you have the illegal immigrant problem.
Very exacerbated by the illegal problem.
Which people get confused in their minds about who is allowed in under the laws of the European Union, which Britain is part of, and who is not. And we see daily people drowning in the Mediterranean, trying to get from North Africa to Italy, and most of them trying to go from Italy to Germany, but some of them trying to go to Britain. People go where they speak the language, where they have friends, where they can melt away and not be seen. So the point of arrival is often not the point of destination.
Yeah.
It is a global problem. It happens elsewhere. My homeland of Zimbabwe is suffering from many, many, many Zimbabweans who are escaping the terrible economic conditions in Zimbabwe, have gone to South Africa, relatively more prosperous, and now the South Africans, particularly the people of Zulu descent, have been rioting and people have been killed and it's very ugly.
It's anti-immigration riots that are
it's
going on.
It's anti-immigration riots, which is interesting to see in Africa. In South America and Central America, every time a country gets a certain degree of prosperity, people start coming in from other countries. The conservatives in the U.S. tend to think they're all coming to the U.S. They go elsewhere. Before Chavez destroyed the economy in Venezuela, it was a magnet for people from Central America. And why wouldn't it be? There was work, there was relative prosperity,
right.
and they spoke Spanish.
Right. Well, let's talk about the European problem right now. There are, by one Italian minister's count, there are about 1 million people in Libya right now who are just stationed in Libya who are waiting to come in these rickety rafts and ships to Italy. Last year, 219,000 actually made it to Europe. They expect that this year it will be that and more. And so you ask yourself, the problem is the instability in Libya right now. The Italians are saying, what can we do? Because years ago, what the Italians used to do was to pay Gaddafi using their oil money. They used to pay Gaddafi to keep the migrants out. That has all broken down now with the Islamist government that is in Libya and with the anti-Islamist government
I would
that's
submit
in Libya.
Every advanced country has a serious immigration problem.
I would submit to you
The bigger problem is when you have a dividing religion, in this case, Islam. people moving into Europe now are not about to become Roman Catholics.
Well, there are Christians that are escaping too. We saw executions of Christians, by ISIS.
But predominantly, they're Muslim.
Well,
and this is a big problem. You know, you can't blame somebody who's so absolutely destitute. And last, in a recent program, I discussed a book about life for Jews in the Soviet Union and Russia in general, and how hard it was, and how they were constantly on the move. Desperate, losing family members.
Right.
Another book in the same vein about survival in France during the Nazi occupation. People who are desperate do anything.
Okay.
And if you have nothing to eat, nowhere to sleep, and you may be killed, you're going to not worry about whether it's legal to emigrate. You're going to get there if you possibly can.
Well, returning to these dreadful boats with immigrants that are coming to Italian shores, and or sometimes not making it, many times not making it, where so many people are lost at sea, a couple of things have been proposed. One, that the European Union and the United States send naval ships to the area during this migration period in the summer. It's a heavy migration period. Another thing is UN peacekeeping
troops. What do you do
with
them when you scoop them up? Where are you going to move them
to? But there's something else that's at work, too, that is so draconian, which is the Australian answer to immigration. Under the current Prime Minister, Tony Abbott, there has been a law in Australia that says that ships that are turned away, ships must be sent back to their home ports by the Australian Navy if they find them at sea. If they make it, if these immigrant ships, and they mostly go back to Indonesia, that seems to be the point of embarkation.
For a time, it was Vietnam.
Right. If they make it to Australia, they have a choice. People who have made it have a choice. You can either go to a remote island where the Australians will send you, or you will go to Cambodia, which is a partner in trying to.
It's just terrible.
Well, exactly. Now the Australians have said, look, our policy is, no boats, no problem. But the Australians are also signatories to a UN Convention on Refugees, so. They have less of a problem than they used to, but there is a question about having signed this UN Convention on refugees. And number two, it's just the...
Let's bring it home here.
How can you do this?
We have an illegal problem.
Right, we do.
They're not all walking across the desert. They're not all crossing the Rio Grande.
No, of course not.
Many of them are going through JFK and Dulles Airport and on visas that expire, and they just melt away. There's a very large, around Washington, there's a very large African population, some of them from my homeland, and I can tell you that most of them do not have papers. They start as students, and then they melt away.
Well, that's a time-honored way, Llewellyn.
That's true.
You start as students, if you're lucky.
There are a great many Asians.
Right,
similarly, at one time, there were a great many Irish people and English
and
too.
Italians. How about my people?
Yeah, well, the world needs to rethink.
Right.
I want to ask you something else. Often in history, at times of great social upheaval and pain, the solution has not been in these weighty tomes that come out of the universities, but from novelists and novels that have had an impact and have shed a light on social conditions. Tolstoy, Dickens, Tom Wolfe. Where are the novelists writing about the issues of today? All the novels I pick up, and this is probably my fault, but all the novels I pick up that are contemporary tend to be what is called urban Gothic. It's about the suffering of the well-to-do middle class, not the true suffering of the underclass. And I wonder what you think about that.
Well, I think to a great extent, we have been sort of gazing at the urban navel for, a long time. But there have also been books that have been about the trials and tribulations of living in Afghanistan. Many books that have come out about life in Afghanistan.
This is I was thinking more domestically, where it's very hard for us to read a novel, and at least it is for me, and the easiest probably with novels about India because of the commonalities.
Oh, yes.
But to read a novel about Afghanistan and to understand what's happening there is very difficult. But to read a novel, or I would like to see novels about people living on the minimum wage outside of this studio, I'd like to see more artistic understanding of the social conditions, because that's one of the missions of art.
I agree with you. So what you're saying is that instead of sociology tomes, you know, what we should be reading is novels about the way life is being lived.
Well, not that we should be reading it, but that the people who write novels should be thinking and penetrating and immersing themselves in real human conditions, not the fake conditions of the urban Gothic and the, as you said, middle-class navel-gazing. You know, art makes a huge difference, and the amount of difference that the great Russian novelists, the great French novelists, and the great English and American novelists made was substantial. I'm not sure they're making it today. I would like to hear. I would like to know who is shaking things up.
Right.
And it's very hard to shake things up unless you have really creative people doing creative things. I thought that Tom Wolfe, not the original one, but the contemporary one, who I once worked on a newspaper with many years ago, I thought he might become the new Dickens. He can do the writing, he can do the research, but somehow the passion fails him at the last moment. But that's my thought, and I thought you might have a thought there. How about the great writers of the past? You know something about the pre-Islamic writers. What did they say to us about today?
Not much. I mean, I think pre-Islamic is probably going back a little bit too far. Pre-Islamic writers used to talk about heroism. They used to talk about their horses. They used to talk about living the life on the merchant routes through the deserts. And I mean, not enough. You know, lots about love and wondering about love. I mean, that was pre-Islamic poetry, and it was very beautiful. But I, you know, again, Lawan, I agree that what we need is the writers of today that can talk about the way we live now, can articulate that. I think it would help to shape some of our politics that tend not to look at the way we live now, but look at too much ideology.
I agree with you absolutely. I would like to see. I'm not always in favor of a third way, but I think in many things now we need a third way, a different look, to bring out a different path for us. We've got all of this bang, bang on many issues.
And
many
much more of it happening in the future, especially in foreign affairs. Much more.
Yeah,
head-to-head.
Well, we've got that in foreign affairs, but we have it domestically. My mailbox, the internet mailbox, is full of people making dreadful accusations about the other side, and it doesn't get you anywhere. That's our show for today. If you know a great novel, do write to us, and we'll tell you about it on the air. Until next time, all the best. Enjoy the spring. It's very lovely. Cheers.